This is Chapter a Day. I'm Michelle Good, and I'm reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. When we left off, following a hunch, Constance pretends to be the social secretary of a wealthy man when she goes to interview Dr. Rathburn. He's the doctor that referred at least one patient to the escaped convict Baron von Matthiasis for treatment. Constance just has a gut feeling about Rathburn, and sure enough, just after she leaves, he sends his receptionist to a nightclub with a message. The message is to be left with the coat check girl and to be eventually picked up by the Baron's brother, Felix. When Felix finally arrives, Constance follows him and apprehends him, then gets arrested herself. But luckily, Sheriff Heath comes to the rescue, not only vouching for her, but also commending her. Catching Felix is the biggest break he's had so far in the case. And the sheriff begs Constance to return to her job as ladies' matron until he can get her her badge. Chapter 9 of Lady Cop Makes Trouble. The women of the fifth floor were glad for my return. Mary Lisko, the pickpocket who escaped from the Newark jail, had been sent back, and in her place we'd acquired yet another pickpocket, this one a girl of only 18 who specialized in train stations, lifting coins out of purses and slipping brooches and stick pins right off the coats to which they were affixed. Our hosiery thief, Martha Hicks, was due to be released in a few days and had embarked upon a program of reform aimed at convincing the new girl to put thievery behind her and find respectable employment. She'd had a little luck so far and hoped I would help persuade the girl. Ida Higgins, who was accused of setting fire to her brother's house, had originally been arrested on the strength of two cans of gasoline found in her bedroom. But it had been discovered that the fire was actually set by a friend of Ida's brother over some feud between the two men. She'd just been cleared of the charges, but remained in custody as a witness until the trial, which was scheduled for next week. Then there was the trouble with Providencia Manafo. Sheriff Heath called John Cordier over to explain it the day after I returned. The two of them sat in the sheriff's office looking about as unhappy to be with one another as two men ever have. Detective Cordier cleared his throat and glared at the sheriff. He had an egg-shaped head and wore a tight, stiff collar that made his neck bulge. "Go ahead," Sheriff Heath said. "This is your case." Detective Cordier looked at the space between us for a minute, his lips pressed together. One leg bounced up and down impatiently. There was a kind of smothered anger about him. Finally, he said, "All right. Mrs. Manafo claimed that Saverio Salino went to her apartment in the morning to pay rent, and they argued over his sister living there. Then he threatened her, and she shot him. She was so frightened, she said, that she ran out of the house and boarded the streetcar. Same car she takes to work every morning, and the driver recognized her. After she rode a few stops, she thought better of it, got off, made her way back home, for reasons of her own that none of us entirely understand. By that time, Salino had dragged himself up the stairs, and someone saw him. That's when we were called." He seemed to be waiting for some kind of an answer, so I said, "Yes, that's how I recall it. What's the problem?" "Problem is that I have witnesses who heard the shot at 8 o'clock in the morning, and Mrs. Manafo boarded that streetcar at 7:30. I looked back and forth at them, puzzled. "But she confessed. Someone must have the time wrong." Detective Cordier shook his head. "Streetcar driver was on his first route of the morning, knows exactly what time he started. He has to get out and punch a time card in Hackensack. He punched it a few minutes before 8. Mrs. Manafo was on board. And don't tell me he mistook her for someone else. You've seen her."
"But the witness who heard the shot could have been mistaken.
Man down the street sets his alarm clock for 7:30 every morning and sits down in his kitchen just before 8 to have breakfast. He heard the shot from the kitchen.
Absolutely no possibility he was up an hour earlier than usual. His wife and children agreed that there had been no change to his morning routine. I have another witness. He was walking by on his way to open his shop, and his stock boy also tells me that the shop definitely did not open early.
But why would Mrs. Manafo confess if she didn't shoot him? I asked.
Detective Cordier looked pointedly at the sheriff, who said, Miss Kopp has spent the most time with her. Let her try.
Turning to me, he added, Go and talk to her again about what happened. Find out what you can about her life. See if you can come up with another motive for the shooting.
Ask her why she went back. Maybe someone else did it and she took the responsibility.
The detective grumbled something unintelligible and dropped back into his chair. I found Mrs. Manafo awake and sitting on the edge of her bunk, looking down at her feet. When she first came to us, there had been sores between her toes that looked like they hadn't healed in years. I'd been persistent with the petroleum oil and the de-lousing powder, and at last they had started to fade. She was looking down at them, twisting them back and forth to view them from all sides, as if she was sizing them up and deciding of what use she might put them to. She looked up and saw me standing outside her cell.
They don't swell like they used to, she said.
They look better.
Feet are as good here.
Don't tell the sheriff you're enjoying a nice rest in his jail. He'll find another job for you.
No, lady, I don't say I like it, but there is less to do.
I don't know what my husband do with no me.
She shrugged and gave a silent little laugh.
Will your husband pay a visit?
She pushed her lower lip out and gave the tiniest shake of her head.
He don't like police.
Then he should write you a letter.
He no write.
We'll send him a letter then when it comes time for your trial. He really should be there.
Why have the trial, lady? I shoot at the boy, I go to prison.
The prosecutor will have some questions for you, even if you do make a full confession. They always do. She tilted her head and considered that.
What kind of question?
I pretended to think about it for a minute. He might wonder why a man would be shot over a single month's rent. It's a small amount of money for such a serious crime.
I tell him pay or go. He make a threat to me.
I'm sure he did. The prosecutor might also ask why you came back after you'd already run off. You were right there when the police arrived.
Where I go so they no find me? I make it easy for them.
She confided nothing so far, and I didn't think she was going to. I had to tell her what I knew, or Detective Cordier would, and he wouldn't be so kind about it. Oh, you did make it easy. The only trouble is that the prosecutor has to go around and find witnesses to tell what they saw, too. She had the small black eyes of a bird. She fixed them on me.
Nobody saw.
But someone heard. She shook her head defiantly.
They don't hear nothing.
Mrs. Manafo, your neighbors heard the shot. We know they did. Only they didn't hear it until after you boarded that streetcar. Her fingers worked at the seams of her house dress, and she crossed her ankles and then uncrossed them.
This could be good news for you. If they think someone else shot Celino, they would let you go. You can return home to your husband. Wouldn't you like that?
She had worked a bit of thread loose, and she pulled on it. The seam was unraveling.
You tell them, she said. You tell them I shoot Celino.
He die?
Yes. She pushed her chin out.
You tell them I kill him.
Sheriff Heath did not find this to be a satisfactory answer and told me to keep after her.
I don't want to jail an innocent woman or let a murderer go free. We need an honest confession. It's one of the reasons I gave for hiring a matron. So see to it that I wasn't wrong. I let her think it over and went to her again the next day. She had been excused from laundry duty over a stiff knee. After I took the other women downstairs to do their work, I went into her cell to talk.
Lady, she called to me when she saw me. What he say?
What did who say?
The little detective. When you tell him, I shoot Salino.
Mrs. Manafo, I told you he wouldn't listen to anything but new evidence. There's nothing I can do unless you tell us something else about that morning. She nodded.
Tell me that.
Detective Cordier? When did you see him?
Now. He come in here. I ask for you, but he say you no here.
I was only down in the laundry. I should have known that he would find a way to interrogate her when I was away. I tried to keep my face passive.
What did he say?
He asked about my husband, she said.
And what has happened to Mr. Manafo? I asked. She put her hand to her chest and murmured a little prayer in Italian. Mrs. Manafo, you can speak to God all day, but you might help yourself by speaking to me right now. Already I was beginning to fear that I knew the truth, that it was her husband who shot Salino, and she had taken the blame to protect him.
I tell you the truth. It was me who shot Salino.
Yes, but Detective Cordier has witnesses.
Listen, lady, I shoot him.
But I no want shoot him.
All at once I understood. A prickly chill settled in around my shoulders. I hoped my expression didn't give me away. But Providencia squinted at me with those coal black eyes of hers and sat back, satisfied.
I aim for husband. Salino come behind to pay rent, but I don't see my husband jump and Salino get shoot.
I tell the truth.
I stay in jail.
But the witnesses, I said feebly, Detective Cordier is absolutely sure the shots couldn't have been fired when you said they were. Without taking her eyes away from whatever she saw beyond her cell walls, she said,
I don't know of no witness. I tell her the truth.
But he wants to set you free. I don't see why. But then I did. Of course I did. Providencia was terrified of her husband. I sat with my hands in my lap and my head cocked back against the wall and let her tell it to me. He was a drunkard and a gambler. He once held a job at the munitions plant, but he'd got caught stealing gunpowder and selling it. When he got caught, they fired him, and Providencia went to beg the foreman to give him back his job. The foreman refused, but he took pity on Providencia and let her work on the cleaning crew, which was so closely watched that no one had a chance to steal anything. Providencia worked 10 hours a day at the factory and spent her nights keeping house and looking after the boarders, which, she said, exhausted her. Lacking any sort of employment, Mr. Manafo took to spending all day in the saloons and became a violent and angry drunkard. He bellowed insults at Providencia over their reduced circumstances, caused mostly by his drinking and gambling, and once threw burning coals at her, nearly setting the place on fire. He frightened the boarders so much, the two of them moved out. When Providencia told him that he would have to go and find a job to make up for the lost rent, he picked up a chair and swung it at her. She landed on her hip when she fell, which is probably why she shuffled around unevenly, and the chair shattered.
Providencia was tormented in this matter for months before another woman at the factory offered her a gun. It was intended as a preventative measure only, to give her some protection while she packed a few things and fled. The woman who brought it to her told her that if her husband saw her leaving, she only had to wave it at him and he would quiet down and let her go.
She don't know my husband, Providencia concluded. Nothing settled him down but a blow to the head.
Or a bullet.
He come for me, and I shoot. What else can I do?
You could have called the police. I knew what a poor suggestion it was, but I felt obligated to make it nonetheless. She didn't bother responding to that. She patted my knee and, groaning, pushed herself to her feet.
I stay here, she said.
My husband, and here she waved her arm triumphantly to indicate the world outside the jail,
he stay out of there.
At last, I understood why she had turned back toward home. She might have run out in terror after shooting Celino, but once she sat down in that trolley car and had a moment to think, she realized that her husband was still alive and that he'd seen her aim the gun at him. The plain truth was, she was safer in jail. If she tried to run, he would find her. She went directly back to the crime scene with the hope of being arrested. The mood at the jail was grim. All the deputies and most of the guards had been out searching for long hours at a stretch and ignoring all but the most pressing of their other duties. Everyone worried that von Matthäus had already slipped aboard a ship or taken a train out west where we would never find him. The New York City police officer sent out to look for Dr. Rathburn found no trace of him at his home or office. Even his receptionist was gone. Sheriff Heath went back the next day to question the manager and the cloakroom girl at Murray's, but learned nothing of significance. The Rutherford police had very little in their files that could help us. A few names turned up in von Matthäus' correspondence, mostly other doctors in California and Texas where he had once lived. Sheriff Heath had already wired the police in those cities and asked them to make inquiries, but nothing came of it. While I was gone, the investigation had been running in circles. Train stations, hotels, saloons, shipyards, and back to Felix's apartment and the shops in that neighborhood, all of it leading nowhere. The deputies and guards were kinder to me than I'd expected them to be. They all knew that I was the one who let von Matthäus get away, thanks to Thomas English, who made it his business to tell everyone. But I'd won their admiration by going out on my own and bringing Felix back. It was more than anyone else had done, English included. Fortunately, Sheriff Heath kept English out of the jailhouse and away from me. He was mostly assigned to watch train stations, a dull but essential post. Still, there was an unease among us. Deputy Morris confided in me that all the men feared for their jobs. If Sheriff Heath was jailed over the von Matthäus' escape, a new sheriff would be appointed to serve until the next election, and who knows how he would feel about all of them. Sheriff Heath had banned any talk of the recriminations that might come his way as a result of von Matthäus' escape. If the sheriff's department was in need of a fortune teller, I would go down to Palisades Park and hire one, he had taken to telling the men. And if any of you have mystical gifts that you've been concealing, kindly use them to tell me where our prisoner's been hiding. But none of us knew, and Felix wasn't telling. We put him in an interviewing room and worked on him for hours, but nothing came of it. In the detective stories in the Sunday papers, the witnesses are all too eager to give up what they know and point the police in the right direction. It appeared that our witness hadn't read the papers.
His silence was of the brooding, snorting, red-faced Stormy variety, but he was silent nonetheless. He did ask at one point whether the sheriff had charged him with a crime. We reminded him that we didn't need to charge him. We could hold him as a witness until Von Matthias was found.
Or you could tell us where he is, the sheriff said,
and we might let you go. When he refused to answer, or even look at us, the sheriff just shrugged and said that he hoped Felix enjoyed his time at the jail. Although he wouldn't talk, he couldn't stop us from having a picture made of him to send to police departments. The sheriff put out a call to all the reporters in town, inviting them to make their own pictures and to run them in the papers. Deputy Morris brought Felix downstairs for the portrait session. Sheriff Heath asked me to come along in case the reporters had any questions about how Felix was caught. I didn't like the idea of stepping into a room full of reporters, and I wasn't sure I should be credited with his capture. It would have been easy enough to say that a deputy made the arrest and just leave it at that. But he insisted that his department had nothing to hide, and it would only be worse if we tried to conceal anything. So I went. I did remember to keep my promise to Carrie. She received the same invitation the other reporters did. I had to put a hand over my mouth to keep from smiling when I walked in and saw her there, standing in the back, one smartly dressed lady reporter among 24 cigar-smoking newspaper men. In the corner, Sheriff Heath was talking to a steely-haired man in a police uniform. The two of them turned at once when Morris and I arrived with Felix, and Sheriff Heath gave a sharp whistle that silenced the room.
"Gentlemen and ladies, I'd like you to meet Felix von Matthias, the brother of our fugitive, and the man who we believe assisted in his escape from the hospital 1 week ago on October 22nd. Miss Kopp here is the one who made the capture, with the assistance of 4 fine officers of the New York Police Department."
"Is it Miss Kopp or Deputy Kopp?" called Carrie from the back, to a rumble of laughter from the men.
Sheriff Heath took it as a perfectly ordinary question.
"Miss Kopp has been serving as a matron here at the jail and has proven herself quite able in the field as well. This is her first arrest, but it won't be her last. She'll get her badge, but the first business of the sheriff's office is to catch criminals and jail them. We ask your help in that today."
I turned away from the crowd, having been made uncomfortable by the attention, and saw Deputy English standing in the doorway with a guard. I hadn't seen him since that night in front of Felix's apartment. He and the guard were whispering at one another furiously. Any excitement I might have felt over the mention of a badge turned sick and sour at the sight of him. Sheriff Heath didn't notice any of this.
Let's take our photographs. I remind you that the prisoner is answering no questions. I will explain what we're looking for, and he will remain silent. Unless he'd like to tell us where he's hidden his brother."
Felix's wrists were chained behind his back so he couldn't raise his hands to shield his face. He kept his chin tucked defiantly down on his chest and turned away from the cameras as Deputy Morris brought him to the front of the room. Once his feet were planted on the marks the sheriff had made on the floor, the deputy shook him by the arm and told him to look up. He would not. Sheriff Heath handed Deputy Morris a yardstick and said,
"Felix, you'll lift your chin up, or we'll do it for you."
Deputy Morris put the yardstick under his chin and gave it a gentle tap. At last, Felix raised his eyes to the room of reporters and gave them a squint-eyed glare that lasted just long enough for Sheriff Heath to make his picture. While he was winding the film, he invited the other reporters to come up. A few of them had cameras on stands waiting in the corners of the room. They brought them forward, and a whole row of photographers took their pictures. When it was over, the sheriff turned to the reporters and said,
"Boys, Ladies and gentlemen, the police chief and I, and here he gestured to the man next to him, we're asking for the public's help in naming any lodgings or other places frequented by this man in the last month. If anyone has seen him going out of any boarding house, saloon, dining hall, or any other place of business, they should come forward and tell us about it without delay. We believe he's been helping to conceal the fugitive, Herman Albert von Matthiasis, whose portrait has already appeared in your papers. I remind you, he's a convicted criminal and considered dangerous. Now, does anyone have a question about our hunt for the fugitive?
How was the capture made? Shouted Carrie from the back.
Her mouth was painted carmine red and twisted in the most delighted grin.
Sheriff Heath looked over at me. Miss Kopp spotted him coming out of Murray's restaurant in New York City, where she'd tracked him after several days of dogged detective duty. She tackled him herself, didn't hesitate to do it. It was quick work on her part, and it's exactly this sort of thinking that we hope to encourage by putting word out to the public. Now go on, all of you. Get something in the morning edition of those papers of yours.
I'm Michelle Good, and I've been reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. And I'll read from it again next time on Chapter a Day.